Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane crop cashmere cocoon cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Pregnancy and postpartum are some of the most nutritionally demanding times of your life, which makes sense because you're basically acting as your baby's pantry while pregnant or nursing. That's why the quality of your prenatal supplements is so vitally important. Hands down, the one I recommend is Needed. So I'm thrilled to say that if you use the code BIRTHFUL at thisisneeded.com, you can get 20% off your first month of Needed products. Needed is the number one nutrition brand recommended and used by me and over 4,000 practitioners, from nutritionists to midwives, functional medicine doctors, and OBGYNs. Needed is for anyone trying to conceive, pregnant, postpartum, and really, this is goodness you can use even before and beyond the perinatal years. Along with prenatals, Needed offers premium supplements for every stage, from egg quality support to a lactation support plan, a stress and sleep support plan, and a gut health plan. In fact, I've had clients rave about Needed's pre and probiotic formula, saying how much better it made them feel compared to their usual probiotics. And to me, Needed's hydration support packets, which only have ingredients you can pronounce, are a must in any doula or hospital bag. Also, Needed's prenatal multi is available in capsules and easy-to-take vanilla powder for those with nausea or pill fatigue. Head over to thisisneeded.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your first month of Needed products. That's thisisneeded.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your first month of Needed products. Welcome to BIRTHFUL. Hello, hello, mighty parent or parent-to-be. I'm Adriana Losada, and I'm just delighted that you're here listening today as we're approaching the end of our series on movement and body wellness in pregnancy. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you certainly have heard acupuncture come up as a common tool to help with a multitude of symptoms, including nausea, flipping breech babies, and getting labor to start. But how does acupuncture work, and what does it feel like? To answer those questions and so much more, I will be talking today with Dr. Patrick Boswell, who is a board-certified acupuncturist, a massage therapist, and a birth doula. Patrick's broad skill set and experiences give him a very unique perspective on how to best help his perinatal clients based on his multifaceted approach to medicine and the body, and I really can't wait to get this conversation going. One thing I wanted to mention, though, in case you're wondering, is that when Patrick talks about OP presentation, he's talking about a baby that is posterior, meaning the baby's back is toward the birthing person's back. And this is a fetal position that generally makes labor more difficult. Usually it's what's called back labor, meaning that you have pain or some really intense sensations in your lower back, aside from whatever you're feeling from the contractions. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Welcome, Patrick. I am delighted to finally do this conversation and for you to tell us all about acupuncture.
Me too.
Let's start off. Tell us who you are, how you identify.
Well, I'm Dr. Patrick Boswell. I go by he, him pronouns. And I'm an acupuncturist, doctor of acupuncture, and I'm a massage therapist and a birth doula. And I've done all the postpartum doula trainings, but I kind of just say I'm an acupuncturist. I practice in Rochester, and then I have hospital privileges with the University of Rochester at two local hospitals, Highland Hospital and Strong Hospital, where my privileges are with the OBGYN department, and I do inpatient treatment during antepartum, labor delivery, postpartum at both of those hospitals.
Which is huge. The fact that you can, there is this recognition that the work you do, acupuncture, works and helps during labor. And so full disclosure, you said you're in Rochester, New York, but what for people to understand, Rochester, New York has a fantastic birth community.
We really do.
We are so lucky. And so Patrick and I are part of the doula co-op together, and we've known each other for as many, like 8 years, I guess, or more.
Yeah.
So acupuncture. We're going to start thinking of approaching it from a person who's never done acupuncture, who's even scared of needles, and let's go with the basics. How does acupuncture work?
So when we're getting into the physiology of acupuncture and kind of the basic science data and research that's available at this point, a lot of it is based on some research done by a woman named Helen Langevin, who she studies like fascia and stretching and muscle and all that kind of stuff. And so she was very fascinated by acupuncture and like what its action was, and especially this concept of da qi, which is like kind of the tissue almost grabbing the needle. Like it doesn't necessarily feel like it's grabbing, but you get this kind of hold on the needle. Like there's a little bit of like resistance. And so what she found, she did some research and found that what happens to the actual tissue is the fascial tissue, the connective tissue that kind of wraps our whole body. It's under our skin. It wraps our muscle cells and the bundles and the whole muscle. It's on our organs. It goes into the brain, everywhere. It's kind of this webbing that holds us all together and creates this like lubrication between tissue because all these layers are on top of each other. And so when we want to move, we want that good lubrication so that everything slides and moves around. So it goes into the fascial tissue, the muscle tissue, and creates a stretch reflex. So the tissue, the collagen fibers actually grab hold of the needle and twist as we're like inserting, manipulating. And so then it creates this stretch reflex about, you know, 2 centimeters is what the study showed, where you're getting a passive stretch in the tissue for about 2 centimeters. So that's part of the basic science. And then we know that drops cortisol levels, which is big stress hormone, also in pertaining to birth and all this stuff, antagonist to oxytocin. So drop cortisol levels, release endogenous opioids from the brain that are like painkillers, endorphins, all this kind of stuff, increase local circulation and local immune system response. And to me, that kind of stimulation, where we know like it's a passive stretch, you're not engaging one muscle to stretch another muscle, it's just passive. And so we know from kind of congruent, like stretching research, like yoga and all these other things, that you're kind of getting that sympathetic, parasympathetic, fight or flight, rest, digest, coming back into order so that our body just does the normal functions it's supposed to do under less stress. So to me, that's a big part of the physiologic actions of acupuncture, is kind of restoring that balance in the nervous system and getting the body to just function the way it's supposed to. We're not making the body do anything it's not supposed to do or it can't do. So we're just trying to optimize the function you already have.
That's really an interesting point of view, because I've never heard acupuncture described from that physiological, neurological perspective. And I think it would be remiss of us to not speak also of the East Asian medicine tradition of where this all really originated and kind of what the lens that it's seen through there, so that people get a full holistic view of acupuncture.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a like Chinese medicine perspective, what we're doing with the needles and the insertion and the stimulation, very specific, and have like the qi do what we want, or have the body do what we want, get certain stimulation in the area. And so when we're talking in a Chinese medicine perspective, we are inserting the needle into a channel. I don't like meridian. I think it's a bad translation. I like channel, and channel almost like river, like a stream, because we say in Chinese medicine, qi and blood flow through the channels.
And qi would be like a bad translation is energy.
Yeah. And so to me, like energy or even like vital energy and everything like that is a bad translation that comes from a Frenchman in the turn of the century who went to China and studied with some doctors and came back and thought he knew everything. So he said qi equals energy, but now we're taking classic Chinese into modern Chinese, into French, into English. And so there's this game of telephone where we lose a lot of the cultural understanding of what qi is. Realistically, the answer to what is qi is like a 2-page paper. Like it's a cultural concept. It's not a 1-to-1 translation. You know, qi is a word that's just used in the language. Like the word for weather is tian qi or heavenly qi. So it's not necessarily this like vital energy. It's like, what's the sky doing? You know, what's the weather? What's the sky doing? So like I prefer a translation, if it has to be a 1-to-1, I prefer a translation more of function. So when we're referencing qi, we're referencing the function or the functioning of whatever we're associating it with. So, you know, if we say spleen and stomach qi deficiency, basically what we're saying is the function of the spleen stomach, or even translating that into more like digestive system. The digestive function is limited, or it's less, or it's, you know, not functioning at optimal. And so to me, qi equals function is a much better translation than qi equals energy. But I think it's definitely one of those things where we lose a lot by translating.
Right. And translations, not only in language, but also in lived experience and worldview. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about this Frenchman, right, he was looking at it from that perspective and then kind of co-opting it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a whole nother topic, but like cultural appropriation of Asian medicine, Ayurvedic, Chinese medicine, Japanese, Korean, like all these things, even taking these concepts out of context and going like, that sounds really interesting. Let me use that for something else. And not understanding the full context of where it came from, who wrote it, why it was written. Like the context is super important for all of this stuff. But that's a different conversation.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I'd so appreciate your lens of looking at it that way, mm-hmm. and understanding that the context is different and not just going with, oh, qi, it's energy, we'll just translate it like that, but really going deeper and trying to get as close to the original texts and concepts as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for people who have never approached acupuncture and are maybe even afraid of the needles, mm-hmm. can you speak to that in terms of how tiny are these needles and what do people feel?
Yeah. So what I use in practice is typically somewhere between 0.2 and 0.3 millimeters wide. And so we're talking about the width of a human hair, except for it's just, you know, sterile stainless steel, one-time use. And then all the nerve endings for really pain are right on that surface level. And so the objective is to get through that surface level, that top layer of skin, real fast. Because if we can get through it real fast, your body doesn't have a chance to have a nervous system response or a pain response. And then once it's through there, the sensation can be, what I tell people is like normal to feel, is like a heavy sensation, a deep sensation that moves, temperature changes, a buzzing or a tingling, and then sometimes just a weird sensation that's hard to put words afterwards too, where you're like, I don't really, this kind of feels weird. It doesn't hurt, but it just feels weird. And that's okay. I think we kind of live in the weird, and that's totally fine for me. The other thing, especially with pregnancy or an end of pregnancy, is increased fetal movement. So feeling your baby move a lot more while you're getting acupuncture can be totally normal. And then the things we don't want are sharp pain or uncomfortable, because it's not supposed to be an uncomfortable process. It's supposed to be relaxing. You know, you're supposed to try and get that sympathetic parasympathetic balance back.
How long is the treatment?
So from like person in the door to out the door, it's usually about an hour for me. It can be different for different providers. And so, especially on first visit, I do a lot of talking where we kind of really chat about these things and kind of dive into bigger concepts, because I'm a firm believer that like education is 50% of any medical treatment, because you know, you're only seeing that person for a short period of time. And to me, knowing what's going on and knowing the concepts and understanding further about like what your body's doing, why it's doing it, is important to truly understanding what's going on. And so you come in, we kind of chat about what's going on, health history, dig into some stuff. Most providers will like look at your tongue, and like we do a diagnostic thing with that where we just kind of look and kind of gets us some ideas of what's going on. We'll take the pulse, and we're taking the pulse not just for how fast it's going, but the quality of the pulse. And so we're kind of assessing the quality of the pulse, and that can kind of tell us a bunch within Chinese medicine, and then asking the questions and into kind of all different systems. So even if you're coming in for, you know, my low back hurts, you know, we're going to dig into menstrual cycle. We're going to dig into, do you feel warm or cold? How's your digestion? You know, do you sweat a lot? Kind of all these things that don't necessarily seem like they connect, but within our system, we're building a larger picture of what your body's doing instead of just going like, oh, low back pain, let me put a needle in there. It's going, well, why is there low back pain and what's contributing factors and, you know, where's the root of the problem? We still will probably put needles in your back, but we want to figure out the larger picture so that the body can heal and kind of resolve the issue, as well as a bunch of other issues. So even if you come in with low back pain and it turns out like, oh, well, you know, I get a little acid reflux and I get a little nausea and, you know, I've got a rash over here, or I get headaches sometimes, like, we're putting that all together and trying to treat you as a person rather than just treat your list of symptoms. Because most of the time, those symptoms are coming from a very similar root. And so we want to find that.
Right. And when you get to the root of the cause, then those symptoms probably change.
Yes.
In some way. And you might get benefits that are beyond, are mm-hmm. more holistic or more mm-hmm. systemic yeah. rather than just your lower back pain. It might fix your insomnia as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then so the person will come in, we'll kind of chat about all this and then put in some needles. Like you'll lay down, put in some needles. And then usually we're letting you sit for 15, 20, 30 minutes kind of with needles in, checking on you regularly, making sure that like everything's still comfortable and giving you that chance to relax and let that tissue stretch. Because that's really, you know, if we're talking about that physiologically, you're getting the stretch reflex. And when was the last time you sat down and you did a single stretch of a single muscle for 20 minutes? I don't
Never,
do that.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Right? And so it's giving the tissue a chance to like slowly unwind and relax and get the time it needs to respond.
And I find that sitting there for 20 minutes, letting the needles do their thing, it's a beautiful opportunity for meditation and mm-hmm. nap. Like mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
8 out of 10 times I fall asleep.
Yeah, a lot of people fall asleep. A lot of people go like, really? It's over already? I feel like I was in here for 5 minutes and it's been like 30 minutes, you know? It really gives your mind a chance to come down. And actually there's some really neat research that showed that like, we kind of call it acupuncture sleep, where like when you fall asleep and you kind of get into this deep meditative state during acupuncture. And they show that it's very similar to meditation where like, you know, 15 minutes of it, 20 minutes of it almost counts as like 2 hours of sleep.
let's ground it in the pregnancy realm, mm-hmm. say some symptoms that people may come to you for during pregnancy. What would those be?
So talking like early pregnancy, it can be mild nausea to the severe, severe nausea, vomiting many times a day. I've had patients that like they can't keep water down, you know, like to that extent where they're getting IVs, they're going in for IV
hydration.
Yeah, like twice a week, and they're on all these medications that just aren't doing anything. And so with super severe stuff, we're trying to treat sometimes even 2-3 times a week just because of that. Most of the time it's like once, twice a week. I tend to do more just once a week, but for really severe, like chronic stuff, sometimes twice a week, especially in the beginning. And then what I tend to say about almost all modalities is if you're not seeing a marked change within 3 to 4 visits, either the provider is missing something or it's probably not the right thing for you or not the right provider for you. Because especially with acupuncture, like it's what we call a slow medicine, but it's not like, it's not a snail. Like you should be seeing changes even within a few visits. If the diagnosis is correct, if the treatment is correct, then things should change. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, I threw up only once every day instead of 3 times a day. Wonderful. That's improvement.
And so we honed in on nausea.
Yeah.
What are other early pregnancy symptoms that acupuncture can help with?
Sometimes the fatigue that happens. And I also treat like habitual miscarriage, where people have kind of a chronic issue of miscarrying. You know, it could be early. It could be 12, 14, 16, you know, weeks. Because that's another thing that we don't talk about enough. It's way more common than we like to think. So habitual miscarriage, it can be sometimes headaches, kind of the little aches and pains. Yeah, I mean, those tend to be the most common early pregnancy type symptoms. And then moving forward, second trimester tends to be a lot smoother. And so oftentimes I'll tell people like, oh, come in every 4 or 6 weeks, something like that. Or just come in if something's bothering you. Come in and we'll see what we can do. And that can be the list of pains that can happen. That can be insomnia. That can be hemorrhoids. It can be strong Braxton Hicks, like Braxton Hicks very early, or kind of cramping throughout. Sometimes even like prolonged, like spotting or bleeding, where, you know, you're not necessarily worried about miscarriage, but you don't really want to be spotting bleeding the whole time.
No.
Yeah. And then when we move to kind of third trimester and end of pregnancy, then we're doing more, obviously more pain, more pelvic pain, pubic symphysis disorder, around ligament pain, sacral stuff. And then, you know, even lightning crotch, like that kind of thing.
The wonderfully named.
I love that one. And then, you know, we're moving into breech, treating non-vertex presentations. And then moving more into, you know, getting the body ready to transition from holding baby in to getting baby out.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity undersink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately. Or, like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yep. No more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy. And so that's a really interesting conversation in that, you know, that can get us into the quote unquote forbidden point of acupuncture. Because as we're talking about all the benefits of acupuncture, is there any counterindication? Is there anything that should be avoided? I mean, I find that the research is so spotty and there you've got people on all camps. So it's really hard to figure out for anybody, for me, for people going to do acupuncture, like, should I do it or should I not?
And honestly, it's true for a lot of acupuncturists too, because I have a bunch of colleagues that when they're treating pregnant people, because they're just not used to it, they'll contact me and be like, is it okay to do this? What does this mean to you? Like, what should I do in this case? And so the idea of these contraindicated forbidden points to me is basically just a board's question. You know, when you're taking your licensing test, you need to say like, these are forbidden during pregnancy because they can induce labor. But in practical sense, if it was easy to induce labor with acupuncture, there would be an acupuncturist in every single maternity ward in the entire country, because it's just not the case. Even when I'm trying, like in a hospital, trying to get somebody into labor or trying to get somebody's body there or move them closer, it's hard. This medicine is a medicine of the individual. And so every patient is different. A point that we say regulates contractions in somebody. Well, if you're not having contractions, what are we regulating? Nothing. Maybe we don't want to do strong stimulation when somebody's 20 weeks pregnant on some of these points just because, but it's not like brushing past these points are going to cause anything bad to happen. And so I think a lot of this comes from context of like who wrote it, why it was written, when was it written, you know, what were the other factors involved in that? And a lot of that we don't know. Because a lot of these things are thousands of years old.
And what I'm hearing is that, circling back to it being really important to have a provider, an acupuncturist, who has the experience with pregnant people and also is really good at understanding the individuality of the situation.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, it's a toolkit and you might have a hammer and a screwdriver there. And yeah, I could use the screwdriver using it on the bath if I need to hammer something. But truthfully, I need this hammer would be better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just me as a person, like, I'm not really afraid of the pregnant body. I don't think there's anything extra to be afraid of. I think there's so much fear associated with everything, and that's part of the reason why our healthcare involved in pregnancy and postpartum is what it is because we're afraid. And so why should we be afraid? If we understand the body, we understand the physiologic mechanisms, we understand what we're doing, then we should be confident in our ability to do it and not cause problems.
And as you mentioned before, you're very much a person of giving the person you're treating knowledge and understanding mm-hmm. of what you're doing. So it's not like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and needle these points for you. I'm guessing there's a conversation that you have with them. Yeah.
Yeah, there is a conversation that's, you know, you let me know what you're feeling. And like, if you feel something weird, even like tomorrow, let me know. Because maybe that was a little too strong. Or maybe that wasn't strong enough, or maybe we shouldn't do this, or we should do this instead. I think understanding physiology is a huge part that I think a lot of acupuncturists miss, in my opinion. And that comes from my massage background, that comes from, honestly, my doula background, is learning about the pregnant body, birth, postpartum, like physiologically, what is it doing, what's happening throughout the body, structurally, hormonally, everything. And then feeding that through the lens of Chinese medicine helps you understand more of what you're capable of and what you're not capable of within the medical system that you're using. It's just a toolbox, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. The body is the body. I mean, we won't get too much into it, but acupuncture is not a unique thing to China. People were putting needles in their body or doing medicinal tattooing and all of these kind of things all over the world. You know, even the Iceman Utsi, the one from like, where did they find him? They found him in the Alps and he was like a 4,000-year-old frozen dude. And he had all these tattoos all over his body. They figured out that 75 or 80% of the tattoos aligned with acupuncture points. That guy didn't go to China. The body is the body. You can only see it so many ways. So to me, the channels are the nervous system. They are the blood vessels. They are the muscular channels. They are like, it's all of this combined. You're interacting with all of this tissue because you can't not. Like, that's just how the body works. You can't do something to just one system in the body. It doesn't work that way. We're very complex beings.
Yeah. And you mentioned a thing about people being so cautious with pregnant bodies. And when I look at the research, like even ACOG had a statement. Oh, I can't remember. It's like 2008. I've got to look up the year. But ACOG had a statement where it was saying, we need more research. We've been so afraid of the pregnant body that then we don't know what works and what doesn't. And while keeping ethically, being ethically responsible, while not putting people in danger, we need to actually have some good research. And it is since then, more and more research has been done relating to acupuncture, and I'm sure to all modalities, but specifically to the perinatal period. What I kept coming upon was there that fear of, like, for example, some might say definite conclusions about its effectiveness cannot be reached and further research is justified, or there is a need for more research, or, you know, further randomized clinical trials are needed to investigate this further. Like, yeah, there's something there, but we can't mm-hmm. completely say just yet.
Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the things that people miss is that that's pretty true across all medicine. We tend to think of, like, you know, they'll call it CAM or complementary alternative medicines, you know, things like that. And we'll go like, oh, well, there's just not enough research. There are things that happen every single day in every single medical office that are not evidence-based, that are just something somebody came up with 100 years ago, and they go like, well, that's just how it's always been done. Stuff happens every day. That happens with medication. It happens with procedures. It happens with all of these things. And so I think part of the thing is we're holding this other stuff to a standard that doesn't exist for everything else. Like we go, oh, okay, well, we really don't know why it works. We see that it does something, but we don't really know why it works. There are infinite things in medicine where we have no idea why it works. That's where like off-label prescriptions even come from. They go like, okay, well, we're going to do all this research on this very specific medication that's supposed to do this very specific thing. Oh, and then we notice it does this other thing, but we don't really know why.
For this other population, right? Like misoprostol.
Yeah, misoprostol. Yeah, like, and we don't really know why, but we can kind of theorize. So we'll just kind of make it up.
Huge important thing for people to understand that one of the most widely used medicines for cervical ripening in an induction is having an off-label use.
It's an ulcer medication. Yeah, it's an ulcer medication.
I think it's important for people to view all this through their critical lenses and whatever standards they want from any of their care. It needs to be applied to all of their care.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And I think part of the other thing that sometimes people miss is that when you're doing a physical modality, acupuncture is very much a physical modality. You are physically inserting a needle. You are physically getting a tissue response. All of this stuff is very hard to do gold standard double-blind, randomized control trials on a physical modality. You can't do it on surgery. You can't do it on PT. You can't do it on chiro. You can't do it on acupuncture. You know, you can try and blind the patient. You can't blind the provider. It doesn't work that way. And so you can't get gold standard. You can't hold a physical modality to the same, you can't have it be a prescription medication.
Right.
The research isn't the same.
So when somebody's looking at an acupuncturist, what should they look for in their practitioner when they're pregnant?
I mean, definitely somebody who's talking about pregnancy, like on their website, or they have experience with pregnancy. Also, I tend to be a big fan, like when I have patients that are moving or they're like, hey, my family member wants to find somebody. Can you, you know, and I'll kind of like do a little Google search the area and look at people's websites and stuff. And the stuff that really makes me personally go like, oh yeah, you should see that person is other things than just acupuncture. If they do just acupuncture, I think it's totally fine if that's the way they want to practice. I just feel like it's doing a disservice to the medicine as a whole because it's not just acupuncture. Like the medicine is really five parts, five main parts. And it's acupuncture. It's Chinese herbal medicine. It's body work. We would call it Tui Na. It's kind of our version of, you know, PT, chiro, massage, like structural, physical, you know, body work. There's dietary therapies and there's kind of self-care exercise. We do Qigong. We do, you know, other things like that, which is kind of like Chinese yoga is kind of quote unquote what I call it because it's the easiest kind of way to picture it. And so if they're just doing acupuncture and they don't do herbs and they don't do body work and they don't talk about diet and they don't really talking about movement, and I feel like you can get a lot of results, but I think in the long run, it's not as good. And so it shows me that the provider understands that it's more than that. This medicine is more than just one thing.
And has more tools in their toolbox.
And has more tools in their toolbox because, to be honest, acupuncture is not the right answer for everybody. And so I have patients come in and we go like, I don't think acupuncture is going to work. But let's do herbs and let's do some body work and let's kind of take a look at what you're eating and how you're eating it and, you know, versus that.
Also because you're doing a very time-specific treatment, right? The needles are there for some time, and then the treatment works for an extended period of time, but then your body kind of goes back to its normal tendencies if you didn't take away whatever else was causing the situation, right? I mean, if you're eating sugar all day long, there's only so much acupuncture can do for gestational diabetes.
Yeah. And so in those cases, it's that education. It's that, you know, trying to work with people to see like what they can change, what they want to change, what they don't want to change, and kind of working with that in there to kind of make a larger life benefit rather than just symptom treat.
So looking at an acupuncturist that is familiar, that has a lot of experience with pregnant population or perinatal work, and then making sure they're not doing just acupuncture.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just a me personal thing.
I mean, that's helpful.
Yeah, yeah. And especially like if they do moxibustion, A plus.
So let's talk about moxibustion. Yeah, what about is moxibustion. That? And that's a great segue into turning breech presentations.
Yeah. And so moxibustion is a technique within Chinese medicine. And it's actually a part of acupuncture theory. And so classically, acupuncture and moxibustion are like related. They're like brother, sister. And so it's a warming technique. It uses an herb called Chinese mugwort, or Artemisia vulgaris is the Latin. It's a plant that probably grows in the parking lot down the street. Like it's just a weed that grows. And so what happens is they prepare it, they kind of grind it up. And so it's just the plant fiber left. And you burn it over specific areas. It can be just general areas. It can be acupuncture points. It can be, you know, all sorts of things. But for the most part, you're just burning this herb over a point for the purpose of like warming the area, warming the point. And so for breech, we're doing it on the outside of the fifth toe, the little toe. And the protocols vary a little bit, but the standard protocol tends to be 10 to 15 minutes each foot once a day. And depending on like when somebody's coming in for breech or taking a larger look at like pelvic structure and tension and, you know, not just going like, oh, breech, here you go. This is the breech protocol. But like really taking a look at like why the baby's breech, you know, and that can get into spinning babies trainings that I've done and more physiologic understanding and structural, like really taking into account why the baby's breech and looking at it from not just a strictly Chinese medicine perspective. The research is pretty good on it actually. And it shows that especially before 36 weeks, it's right around like 60% of like people turn with a combination of acupuncture and moxibustion. Versus like the kind of 45%, which is kind of typical. So it bumps it up some for sure. And it's every day for 10 days is kind of a course of moxa is what we say.
If a person has their baby in a non-optimal position, whether it be breech or posterior, then the idea is as soon, especially for breech, the sooner the better.
The sooner
you
the
start
better.
Getting treatment.
You know, there's more space. Frankly, there's more space for a baby to turn earlier. And we're adding on to that, you know, there's a good chance your baby turns without doing anything. I think we have to admit that. We're not saying like, oh, moxibustion is this amazing thing that's like going to definitely turn your breech baby and nothing else will. Like, there's a good chance your baby will turn on its own if you did absolutely nothing. But this just kind of improves the odds some. Yeah, and so before 36 weeks is preferred, but I mean, I treat people as late as they find out or they want to come in. And then, you know, I've heard stories of babies turning on the OR table for a scheduled cesarean. You know,
smart baby.
Well, I think it's when I hear that, it makes me go like, oh, they were holding, like they were mentally holding that baby. And so as soon as the anesthesia kicked in and they couldn't physically use their mind to hold that baby, even subconsciously.
Right. It would have never been intentionally, right?
Yeah. And then baby just whoop, because now the space is there.
The tissue's relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I see that sometimes in really long labors where the uterus is getting crampy and tired and things are getting a little sloggy and somebody gets an epidural.
Oh, yeah. And then it just changes.
So that can be a really good tool for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that with epidurals too, where oftentimes it's that kind of person that craves control and like for some reason, like their brain just will not shut off, and it's not their fault. It's just what it is. And that physical mind body break, that epidural goes like, you can't control this anymore. And the body could just allow the physiologic function to happen without the frontal lobe interfering.
Because we know that we need to get to labor land. We need to get to a deeper brain wave. We need to shut off that thinking brain. And if that thinking brain is so strong that it won't shut off, then it's really difficult to create some labor, which then brings us back to another benefit of acupuncture, mm-hmm. which is that when you're on the table and going to those deep brain yeah. waves, you're actually yeah. helping your body practice.
Absolutely. And to me, that's a lot of the function of acupuncture, to like ripen the cervix and get the body in a better place. Get that sympathetic, parasympathetic back.
To some balance.
To what we want it to be. Yeah, to that balance. And so mental tension, physical tension comes down. Hormonal function, digestive function, immune function comes back up. And we kind of regulate. And it's that going back to, you know we're dropping cortisol levels. And cortisol is an antagonist to a bunch of hormones, but oxytocin. And so you are feeling the physical effects of stress less. The hormonal system allows the body to do the physiologic function it's supposed to. And it's not the person's body doing anything wrong either. It's built to do this. It's evolutionary, like in your system, to have a mechanism of, I'm giving birth in the woods, twig snaps behind me, I need to stop this labor, I need to move to safety, I need to start again. The problem is that now it's not a twig snapping, it's the machine beeping and it's the lights and it's the people bothering you and it's the, you know, all of those things are stress responses. They're all like triggering this sympathetic response. Cortisol level comes up, shuts things down because your body doesn't feel safe enough to enter into the vulnerable state that is labor. Labor is evolutionarily the most vulnerable you will ever be in your entire life. And so you need to feel as safe as you possibly can. And so acupuncture can kind of help re-regulate some of that too.
And I really appreciate how it can do that while at the same time checking the mental box of, I did something for this.
Absolutely. Maybe a year ago or something. But I got called in. She was a patient of mine ahead of time. Went in, getting a lot of back pain, a lot of sacral pain. And I walked in that room and within like 3 minutes, I was like, oh, this baby's just OP. Like the contraction pattern, the pain, the sensation, like everything was just screaming OP to me. So I was like, okay, well, we'll do some of this stuff that I do for like turning OP and some body work and like trying to get the baby to turn. And then she was like in a better spot. And so I left because that she had a doula. And like my place in the birth as an acupuncturist is when there's something going on that needs to be corrected, I come in 1 hour, 2 hours, sometimes 3 or 4, but usually it's like 1 hour or 2. Try and address the problem, fix it, get it to a better spot, and then turn it back over to kind of your birth team. And so I left and I was like, you know, if you need anything else, just let me know. And then I got a call again, probably like another 4 hours, 5 hours or something. And they were like, oh, she really just wants you to come back in. I came back in. And she was like laying on her side, sleeping between contractions and waking up to just go like, oh, and then like go back to sleep. And like, I looked at the doula and I just like mouthed, why am I here? And she was like, she just was like, I need Patrick to come in. And so that was when I went like, oh yeah, there's literally nothing pathologic going on right now. It was that mental block. She needed me to come in so that she could feel like she could do it, or that she could move to the next step. And so I literally just did some like hip rocking and some, you know, some doula stuff. And I just let her doula take a nap for 1 hour.
Right.
And then she woke up and I left. Like it was that mental block. Like it had nothing to do with acupuncture. It had nothing to do with like, It was just that.
It's so complex.
It's so complex. Yeah, the body is infinitely complicated and we'll never truly understand it fully.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me about induction, because I feel like, is that the thing you get called in for most?
Yes. So when I get called inpatient, it's mostly for to assist with an induction. So it's one of those things where we're not supposed to say like acupuncture induces labor, which I mean, it really doesn't. That's not the goal, especially for me. I'm not a fan of like trying to take a sledgehammer to break open a door when we could just try and unlock it and turn the handle. Because then at that point, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to be Pitocin or something? I don't want to be Pitocin. Like Pitocin has its functions and it can be great. But like, that's not me. I'm not Pitocin. I'm not trying to force the body to do something that it doesn't want to do. That's not within my capability. And so it's about taking down the roadblocks, so to speak. So whether that's mental or physical or position or hormonal or, you know, whatever, to get the body to progress organically to what it's supposed to do. When I'm in the hospital, it's a little different story because as soon as you enter the hospital, now you're on a timeline, which means I would like you to meet that timeline. And so that means now I'm on a timeline. And so now I need to try and get a physical noticeable change as quickly as possible, which tends to mean that intensity and strength of the treatment goes way up. And so people that have had acupuncture before, I'm saying like, this is probably going to be a lot more than what you're used to. And people that have never had acupuncture, I go, this is not what a normal treatment is like.
So what makes it different?
So it's just the intensity. It's just the sensation that we're attempting to get is a lot more. So like those heavy sensations, those weird sensations, the sensations moving up or down a limb, or just heavy, achy, baby moving, weird, you know, all of these kind of numb, sometimes even like numb kind of sensations. Like we're really working to get those sensations because it's an indication that like we're affecting the nervous system right now. We're getting a stimuli right now because that's what we need to do. If you're, you know, in the hospital and you've had like one dose of miso and it's kind of like, you know, 40 weeks induction or something like that, or even like 39, like we're not necessarily even doing a treatment like that at that point, because again, your body's working through this still. It tends to be more of like a premature rupture membrane kind of induction where, you know, they don't want you to go 4 days, or it's like active labor. We're trying to like change the position of a baby, trying to treat certain pains, difficulty pushing, yeah, failure to progress, getting stuck at a centimeter, baby not transitioning fully.
Yeah. So the scenario that I am more familiar with is pregnancy is starting to get into that 41 week or something is up and they're looking at an induction, talking about an induction for next week, or they're having prodromal labor that is just not organizing labor and it's going on for days and days, and saying, hey, acupuncture, you haven't been doing it, but acupuncture could really be a really good tool here. Why don't you try it? And what I tell my clients, because I know that the treatment at that point is a little different than usual treatment,
yeah,
I tell them, this is like Viking acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a little bit more intense.
I think the funny thing is too, is like, it's not even Viking acupuncture. It's just Chinese acupuncture. Like, honestly, like real Chinese acupuncture is very much, and Chinese medicine in general is very much a, this is going to suck today and feel good tomorrow kind of thing. Like in America, in the United States, we cut down on sensation a lot. Like when I was in China, the amount of stimulation and the amount of like intensity of treatment that I saw for just regular everyday people was like at least 2 to 3 times what we do. And it's just accepted. I think it's part of that, like, you know, I don't want to call us babies or anything, but like we're not good with a lot of sensation. Like it kind of freaks us out, which is totally fine.
We kind of do everything we can to avoid.
Oh, totally. I mean, pain. We do everything we can to avoid sensation, right? And pain and being uncomfortable. And, you know, that's, it's just part of it. But The funny thing is it's actually more of a traditional Chinese treatment to just be like, okay, well, you're not going to like this, but it's going to work. Yeah.
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 And would you say that, and I think this matches what you were saying before of you're not Pitocin, of that you're helping the body do things. I feel that I don't see acupuncture get labor going, but I do see it get the body more ready, like even be Absolutely. More of a cervical ripener, like get the body more ready to accept labor or the induction and make for an easier experience once it gets going.
Yeah, and even the data we have as of now is, because I wrote a paper on this as part of my doctoral program on acupuncture for like preventing C-sections. And honestly, there's really nothing, there's really no like conclusive evidence. There's no like good data that shows that like it reduces C-section rate. But what it did show from that research is that it raises Bishop scores and it raises cervical dilation. And so even over a 24-hour period, it's usually a extra one on the Bishop score, an extra centimeter, or, you know, more effacement or more softening or things like that.
Yeah, can we explain what the Bishop score is?
Basically, it's just a score that providers use to determine how effective they think the induction is. Or is it the right call to induce now? Or is it better to just wait?
Right. And they start with a Bishop score to sort of understand, well, do I start with a cervical ripener or can I go directly to Pitocin? Because Pitocin is just going to create contractions, but if the cervix is really long and tight and closed.
Yeah, then what are those doing?
Not much, right? So you got to have and that's where it's not a favorable cervix and the induction will probably fail or lead to a cesarean.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see better Bishop scores and cervical dilation over a 24-hour period in the research.
Yeah. And that is my, you know, my anecdotal experience is that, and that's what I tell my clients, it can be really helpful to then, even if you go in for an induction, you might just need the cervical ripener and that's it. You might not go to Pitocin. You might not, you know, it'll be one day instead of four.
Yeah. Even if you're not like, oh, wow, I spontaneously went into labor 2 hours after I got my treatment. Like, I've had that happen. But I think most of the time, we are just trying to get the body into a better place for whatever ends up happening. And if you avoid the induction, wonderful. And if you don't, hopefully you're in a better place where there'll be less desire for intervention along the way.
How is your experience with prodromal labor? Because that's, I find it really helps.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, prodromal labor is, it's really just like the body's kind of like right at this like apex and it just won't go over for some reason. And so, and that can be mental, that can be position, that can be like all the other things we've been talking about this whole time. And so figuring out like, again, why haven't you gone into labor yet? Why is this happening? And addressing that can get the body to move into a place. Either, you know, stop contractions and say, like, you're not ready. You shouldn't be having contractions. And so stop contractions. Because I'll do that antepartum sometimes, too, for, like, so antepartum is, like, usually it's high-risk people or people that, like, their water broke super early or they're basically on bed rest, like hospital bed rest until they hit, you know, 36, 37, 38 weeks, and then they're going to induce them to get baby out. They're just trying to keep baby in as long as possible for whatever reason. And so a lot of those people have like premature contractions. And so what I'm doing in those cases or in prodromal sometimes is trying to stop or slow down contractions rather than speed up. And ironically, some of the points we're using to stop contractions are the points we say like, oh, those are contraindicated points. You shouldn't do those. And we do those because it regulates contractions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about making them stronger or weak. It's regulate. What's the body supposed to be doing right now? Let's just have it do what it's supposed to be doing.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And I also note that sometimes you will leave people, and I've seen other practitioners do this too, is have a treatment and then say for induction and then leave them with some AccuTacs with like little sticky mini itty bitty needles or seeds.
Yeah, so I
sort of prolong the treatment.
Yeah, so I mean, I use seeds, and that's just because I work in the hospital. You don't want unaccounted for metal in the body when you're in a hospital. And so I use seeds. They're this little seed. It's called a Vicaria seed that I think it's just the perfect size and shape. Like, I think it's just the perfect size and shape. And so it's a seed or a metal ball some people will use. And they'll put it on ears or other points on the body too, just to like give a little bit of pressure stimulation. And then the people that use the tacks, they're literally just this super tiny, you know,
like an eighth of an inch.
Yeah, like super tiny needle that like just goes barely into the skin. And so it's just kind of this consistent stimulation. And I have no problem with those. I think they're great. I just try and stay away from metal because of just the hospital stuff.
Clients that have used them, they really like it because they can press on it. So then like segues us to a conversation on acupressure. Can you speak to that?
So acupressure is basically just this concept of you're using, you know, your finger pressure or a tool or something like that to press on the area that we would typically needle to try and get some of that stimulation to kind of, you know, activate the point, so to speak. And so like it can be really good stuff to do at home. I do some of it in labor when, you know, we're in a place of, you know, especially active labor, where like, I don't want you to be sitting on a table in one place, not moving. Like, I want you to be moving. I want you to be doing these things. I want you to be feeling what you're feeling. And so then we're doing more like strong stimulation, like really like digging a fingernail in kind of thing. But that, again, that's during labor. And so you want that strong stimulation. At home, it can be like rubbing in circles and pressing. Yeah. And you can do it, you know, there's all the kind of typical contraindicated points and labor points that people will use to try and like get labor started. Wonderful. Do that if you want to. And then, yeah, it can be a really great tool during labor too for pain, position.
Where can people learn about acupressure?
So honestly, even just like there's a lot of online resources and even YouTube where, you know, you can just type in like acupressure for pregnancy or acupressure for labor. And like you're going to get 1,000 videos of somebody talking about like where they are and showing you and doing demonstrations and all that kind of stuff. YouTube is a great resource.
It's a great, the internet, such a great resource.
Yeah, right.
So in terms of symptoms that can also be helped with acupuncture during pregnancy or during labor, what are some things that we left out?
So I think what we left out was hemorrhoids, which especially postpartum and herbally and moxa and like all these kind of techniques will help with that. And then even in the same realm, varicose veins, which a hemorrhoid is basically just a varicose vein. And so we're helping with that circulatory system, getting tone back in the circulatory system. And then gestational diabetes, you know, it's a blood sugar issue. And so regulating that blood sugar, regulating those hormonal systems can be really helpful. And then preeclampsia and high blood pressure. There's even, you know, herbal things that we can do for those as well as acupuncture to try and, you know, again, get the stress down, get the tension on the vessels, because sometimes the tension on the vessels can even be, you know, a relaxant, a prostaglandin thing where, you know, we're supposed to have this relaxant going through our bodies, these prostaglandins that like help to stretch things. And so if things aren't stretching, then blood pressure goes up because you're having all this extra blood. So getting that prostaglandin relax and release too, along with that. And let's see.
How about for anxiety and just mental health, depression, both pregnancy and postpartum related?
Yeah, I mean, especially pregnancy, postpartum, because you're going through wide hormonal swings and they have a lot of impact on how, what our perception is and what our stressors are and how we handle things. And so kind of keeping that stress response in the body under control, kind of widening that threshold of like what gets you. Because that's what people will say too. Like when I'm treating anxiety, depression, mood disorders, it's not necessarily that it's gone necessarily, because the stressors won't go away. Like for the most part, we kind of live in a constant state of stress, and it's just the world we've created. Like it's not our fault. Like we can't avoid it. It just happens. And so like we can't really have a stress-free life. It doesn't exist. But what we can do is we can have our bodies cope with the stress better. And so it's people saying, you know, this thing happened to me and typically I would have exploded. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like they just felt like they could take a second, think about it, respond appropriately rather than just like instinctual stress response responding to things.
Like a little bit more capacity and tolerance.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, Patrick, we've had a fantastic conversation.
Yes. As always.
We didn't go too far in all the tangents.
I know. I was a little afraid.
Thank you so very much for doing this today.
You're very welcome.
That was board-certified acupuncturist, massage therapist, and birth doula, Dr. Patrick Boswell, who specializes in menstrual, reproductive, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and pelvic health. You can learn more at anewlifeacupuncture.com. And you can connect with us at Birthful Podcast on Instagram. In fact, if you're not driving, we would love it if you would take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode, or even telling us about your experience with acupuncture. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if you find this podcast to be one of your go-to resources for pregnancy, birth, postpartum, the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the wonderful products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. Thank you so very much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pod, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere you listen, and then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.